Hello, my name is Marjorie Wingrove, and I'm your host of Death Happens, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio 92.7 CFFF. I've created this show as a way to normalize the conversation around death-related topics. Death is inevitable for every living thing. I believe knowledge and preparation can create some comfort and peace of mind. My guest today is Barbara Schreiner-Tudell. Reverend Barbara is an international speaker, minister, teacher, entrepreneur, and author. Celebration of Life services are an important part of her ministry. She shares her personal trauma and triumph, joy and laughter, inspiring people to live an authentic life lived with love. Deeply spiritual, Barbara continues to keep her mind open for the inspiration that God continually provides. Still learning, discovering, and living large, Barbara shares her journey to fulfillment and the tools and techniques that got her here. Her website is www.barbarashrinertrudell.com. She can be found on Facebook through Agape Unity, which is AGAPEUNITY. Welcome, Barbara Schreiner-Trudell, to Death Happens. I'm really glad that you're here.
Glad to be here.
Now, you and I, we follow the same spiritual practice generally. We have a lot of the same spiritual principles. And the way that our teachings or the way we've learned to talk about death is maybe different than a lot of people think about death. That's what I'd like to talk about today, as well as so far on the show, I haven't talked about what it means for someone to die by suicide. And I've been at a service for someone who that we both know. You were doing the service and it was someone who died by suicide. And there were things that you said at that service that were really comforting and meaningful, at least to me, and I know others. The reassurance that that person's life wasn't about the way they died. When my niece died by suicide a couple of years ago, we talked about what that meant. So a lot of this is going to be about where spirit goes, what happens to spirit when we transition. And I know that you can take it from there.
Well, I've had some, I've done a fair bit of work with suicide for any number of reasons. Interestingly, my stepbrother committed suicide when he was 37. That was the first person that I knew personally who took their life. And what was interesting, I guess, about it was that when I was in meditation on the Sunday morning following his death, just trying to get through the day, all of a sudden he was with me. And we had a communication. I won't call it a talk because I'm not exactly sure how it happened. And the communication was about how he was okay, that he exuded love. Like the love coming through that interaction was so profound. I don't know that I've ever felt the depth of that before. And I knew he was okay. And he told me that he had to really, from his human perspective, this was his only way out. So he also asked, like I say, it was a communication, not a conversation, but he asked me to do his eulogy. So I, of course, said yes. He was in a member of the Jehovah's Witness when he died. They wouldn't allow me to speak in the Kingdom Hall because they said I'm not family. And the only people who can speak there are members of Jehovah's Witness. That's the family. I think that's what my brother was trying to escape, was that idea that somehow his birth family, the kids, all of us kids who grew up together, that we weren't considered part of that. So that was kind of a difficult one. And when I spoke to the brothers at their church at the Kingdom Hall, they said, well, you can't speak. We have, you know, only brothers of the church can speak. So I was quite emotional after that, going, so what do I do? Because I already told him I would do this. And it was actually the day of the funeral when I woke up early in the morning and I thought, I'll write a poem and I'll print it and I'll give it to everyone. And so that's what I did. And I'm going to share that poem with you now. And it's called In Loving Memory, Dean. There comes a time when we say goodbye. Not an easy task, like climbing a mountain, painful and slow. Life brings meaning when we consider the past, children, procreation, the expression of love and dreams, clouds in the sky, light, bright, joyous to watch. sisters, brothers, children, parents, and wife, all part of the greater scheme of things. This deep expression of love brings life. Like the seed of the rose, so small and insignificant, or so it seems, but in the spring, the beauty and splendor. Memories, joyous and sad, bring peace and laughter, sometimes pain. Feel life as this is how we heal, like the dawning of a new morrow it is yet to be experienced. Know the love, remember the joy, consider all things, a drive in the country, climbing a tree, flying high on a swing. Be happy for life. Love the memories and unite in love. Celebrate life and honor each other. Through this honoring, we again bring life to our memories. Remember always the beauty of this man and remember his love. There are no tomorrows and yesterday is gone. All we ever have is the here and now. Live life with fullness and grace. It's all he ever wanted. Express every moment in love. These are the messages I bring. Messages of hope and love and an honoring of a man, our father, brother, son, and husband, as he will always be. He leaves in peace, is forever with each of us in love and joy. He found a better place and will continue to guide each of us to a true understanding of ourself. God gave us a beautiful gift, the gift of choice. There is no right or wrong. There is only love. Regardless of the choice you make, there will always be an outcome. Follow your inner guide, knowing all perfect things will come. Even when it's not so obvious at first, eventually we will see the truth. God bless you and keep you in faith. So that poem I gave out to all the family and close friends and stuff at the memorial service, because it felt important to honor my commitment. Right after the funeral was done at the Kingdom Hall, we went to the bar, had a few drinks, and memorialized him there in true grace and love and joy and tears and sadness and all the things that go along with the passing of someone that we care about. The journey of suicide is, you know, when a person has chosen to leave this life in that way, it's very difficult for so many to understand. And the focus tends to be on why, how could they have done this? How did I not see it coming? How come I couldn't prevent it? Like, we're all trying to answer questions that can't be answered. We'll never know why. We can guess, but we'll never know why. So it's up to us. We can choose to focus on the life of the individual, the reason why we love them in the first place, or we can focus on the moment that took them. It makes way more sense to focus on the reason I love them in the first place and let go of the inability to find an answer, because there isn't one.
This came up when I was having a conversation about my niece's death. And, you know, I'm still shaking my head. I can make up so many stories about why. Yes, that decision. And I've never been angry or resentful that she made that decision. I have a sincere acceptance. And my niece did visit within a week of her transition. You know, I just remember having, as you say, a communication. We're just laughing our heads off in that, you know, that outer body way of communicating. I said to her, wait a minute, you can't be here. You're dead. And she disappeared. And I thought, oh, why did I do that? We were having such a good time.
Oh, that's very sweet. Yeah, well, it's interesting. I think most of us fear death. For a long time, I did. And then through my spiritual practice, when I took on meditation, it was an opportunity to sort of be in the stillness. But one day in my meditation, I stepped out of my physical body. And what really struck me at that moment was I was still me, completely me. But I could look back and there was my body sitting there and I was apart from it. And at the time, it kind of freaked me out. So I jumped back in. What it showed me is I'm not this body. This is the costume I wear for this life incarnation. It isn't who I am. It's a part of my expression, but it's not who I am. And who I am is so much more than that. And it was in having that experience that I came to a place of going, well, what is death really? A shedding of this body. It's a little bit like changing clothes for the season. You know, we put our sweaters away and our leggings and stuff, and we bring out our sundresses or shorts and tank tops. And so I feel like death is kind of like that. It's like we've had life in this form, and then we go, well, I'm done now. And so off I go. And I transition into, I don't know what, but obviously something else. And I think my experience of people who've died fascinates me, because if they were really gone, how come I can still experience them in a way that is so present? I had a situation with my ex-husband's grandmother, who I'd been quite close to in the church. And then when I left that church, the Nazarene church, and found CSL, it was like I didn't really spend time with her because I thought she would be judgmental of me going into ministry. I had a dream about her one night, and she came to me and she told me how proud she was of me. And I was just elated. I woke up in the morning so excited and happy. And it was because I loved her so much, and what she thought of me really mattered. And then I'm talking to my husband a little while later, my former husband, because he was picking up the kids for the weekend. And we were chatting, and I said, how come you're home? Because I was going to leave a voicemail. And he goes, oh, I just got back from a funeral. I said, oh, who died? And he went, Nana, 3 days ago. And I was like, and you didn't tell me? He says, why would I tell you? It was my grandmother. I guess you didn't realize how close we were. But I had dreamt about her the night before, and it didn't feel like a dream. She came and said, I'm so proud of you. And that, to me, again, was a moment of, you know, and there'll be naysayers out there who go, yeah, right, you had a dream and you think it's real, good for you. But the reality is that how I receive it or perceive it is up to me. And it makes a difference in my life when I think that there is a very thin veil between the here and the there, and that really we live in this multidimensional universe. And so having experiences from one realm to another, well, why not? People talk about their near-death experiences, right? Same type of story.
Well, and near-death awareness as well. That's something I talked about in a recent show, was near-death awareness, that people see relatives who've already transitioned. They talk about traveling, so, you know, and seeing angels and seeing lights and seeing places they want to go to. You know, and a lot of people, you know, mortal people, the people who are here are confused by those experiences and don't know how to address those experiences with their loved one, and think that maybe their loved one is just losing their mind rather than being ready to leave their body. What else, you know, we talk about being more than this body, and that is coming to me in different ways as I meditate more, as I think about death more, and I realize that the whole of me, you know, even though I am having this human experience, the entirety of me is not just contained in this body. I am living beyond this body. This body is something that is mine to take care of, to, you know, this body is something that is mine to use right now. But I've had experiences in my life that absolutely tell me that I am not just the body, that there is so much more going on with my being and the energy.
There's so much more. I remember when I first had my spiritual epiphany, I was in a Nazarene church, and I absolutely, in that moment, it was like I went from darkness to light. I was able to see for the first time, and I felt such a connection with God as love. I stayed in that church for about a year and a half, but about 6 months in, my husband left. I got a phone call. He went to a bachelor party on a Friday night. He phoned me Sunday afternoon to say, well, I guess you figured out I'm not coming home. I was devastated. What's interesting is probably about 6-8 weeks in, I was really struggling. My kids were angry. They were fighting with each other constantly. No matter what I did, I couldn't even begin to wrangle them. And I decided, I'm done. I can't live like this anymore. And so I got the kids looked after. I, you know, set everything up. I knew exactly what I was going to do. And I was getting ready to leave the house to go and take my life. I was going to drive my car into a highway divider because I knew that would probably do the trick. Nice cement wall at a high speed. But what's interesting is as I'm getting ready to leave the house, the phone rings. And at first I'm kind of ignoring it. And then I think, well, you know, if it's my sister about my kids, I better pick up. So I pick up the phone and there's a woman on the line and she says, well, you don't really know who I am, but I sit behind you at church three rows back. And for the last hour, you have been on my mind constantly. And I don't know why. And I said, well, you know, I'm kind of in a hurry. I got to go. She goes, yeah, I'm really sorry, but I have to talk to you, but I don't know what about. I just know that I have to talk to you. And I tried a couple of times to get off the call. And then all of a sudden it just hit me like a ton of brick. I don't know if she said something like, you know, I feel like God has sent me to call you or whatever the case may be. But all of a sudden, I just broke down and I said I was heading out of the house to take my life. And we had this conversation that made me believe that God had a different plan for my life experience than for me to take it in that way at that time. And it was a shift for me because of this complete stranger. I mean, somebody I'd never even spoken to. Like I knew who she was because we all had our seats where we sat in the church, right? So I could picture her, but I'd never once had a conversation with her. I didn't know her at all. To have her be the messenger was so profound because she had to go through some trouble to get my phone number and everything else to give me that call. And it changed my life in that moment. There was just a deepening of my understanding or my inability to understand the full connection of all of us in this life experience and how we can know things for each other when we don't even really know why. But somehow there's that deep connection that occurs that is really profound and remarkable. And it made a huge difference in my life because I'm still here. And that was almost 40 years ago. So it's been a while.
Wow.
You know, coming to terms with death is such a big thing. I created some videos a couple of years ago called the F and D word. And I referred to it like that because it seems like in day-to-day conversation, it's not polite to use the F word. That's swearing and cursing, so that's not okay. And talking about death is also something that a lot of people really don't want to have that conversation.
I didn't get that memo, either about the F word or the D word.
I know that about you. Well, and the thing is, I talk about death a lot, and I think it is my hope that by exploring it, because in my videos, I'm not trying to explain death. I'm just asking people their opinion of it. And it's fascinating to see how different people pull it together. And the videos, most of them are, you know, 5, 4, 6 minutes, whatever. They're not long, but they explain each person's experience of death and dying and their own belief around it. And it's interesting how different everybody's experience is. It's quite remarkable, actually. So who's right?
We're all right.
Yeah, because until we actually die, we don't know for sure. But we have experiences that suggest there's something more going on than what we can see, touch, and feel.
And you and I are totally on the same page about talking about death and making it part of the conversation.
Make it normal.
Make it normal. And my daughter and I will openly talk about death in mixed company, as it were. And once in a while, I take notice that somebody's getting uncomfortable. Yeah. But I think they're allowed to be uncomfortable. And it's not my responsibility to, in that moment, make them comfortable. I do strive to facilitate comfort when someone is experiencing the trauma of grief. Mm-hmm. That's for sure a calling for me. But I will allow my daughter and I to have a conversation in front of people.
Of course. Of course. We don't want to, I don't think we should keep our children away from death. I think death is as much a part of life as birth is. And our resistance to it isn't going to change that. We're all going there, every last one of us. It's just we haven't set the date yet. And I think it's really important when I think about things like suicide, for example, I actually would say, well, to experience death from the suicide perspective means I've chosen the date, time, and method consciously. When I die from cancer, I've chosen it unconsciously, but I've still chosen it. That should annoy a few people. Because I really believe that each one of us comes here with certain things that we bring. We have our little something that we bring to the universe at this time that is essential that we give it. And whether we fulfill that or don't fulfill that, I really believe that at a very deep and unconscious level, we all know when we're going to die and how. I truly believe that. And because I believe that, the truth is all death is by choice. It's just sometimes we're not as conscious that we've made that choice. But if we look at some of the conversations between people that we know who are dying or somebody who's recently died, and we look at them and go, you know, they did this or that. Like, I don't know if it was a friend of my daughter's or whose, but, you know, one of the kids had given away, like a day before he died, he had given things to his friends, like his stereo. What teenager gives away their stereo, right? So he had given away all these things. And then 2 days later, fell and had a brain injury and died. But I think he died by the time he got to the hospital. It was a completely fluke accident. And yet somehow, and he was only 15 or 16 at the time, somehow there is an understanding, or at a very deep level that we haven't quite connected with, there is our way out. I remember doing work with a friend of mine who had AIDS and had been very, very sick. And we prayed together one day, and he had paid me to do his memorial service. When he healed, when all of a sudden he got better from his HIV and AIDS and got healthy again, I said, well, let me give you your money back, because obviously you're not going to die anytime soon. He said, no, I'm going to die when I'm 82 or whatever. I'm just going to sit down under a tree and I'm going to leave. I went, well, let me pay you now, because you're like 30. So I may not even be alive back when that time comes. And he goes, oh no, you'll still be here. And I want you to do it. And I just laughed and I went, all right, I'll just keep your money then. It's interesting that he just had this really clear understanding that no, when it's time, I'm just going to sit down and do it. It doesn't have to be a big process. I think sometimes we get ill and die because this will go over well, because we can't just leave, right? People wouldn't understand, right? Because that's suicide, right? So if I do that, then people are like, oh my God, why would you do that? Well, my life was hell, so I decided to leave. Or I wasn't satisfied, or I felt complete, so I decided to leave. But the person who dies slowly of cancer, all of a sudden, that's, how sad is that? How terrible is that? Is it sad and terrible? The suffering is for sure, right? That's really sad and terrible. But we're all dying. From the moment we enter life, we start the process to death.
And dying of an illness is somehow the acceptable way.
Of course it is.
It's what we expect. And I'm not talking in terms of acceptance of death as it relates to the process of grief, but it's the expected way. It's socially acceptable.
It's socially acceptable, yes. If a person dies of old age, that's socially acceptable. If they die of some disease, that's socially acceptable. We've decided to frame death in ways that we can make it manageable for ourselves rather than this great unknown. And I think the reason we're so afraid of it is because it is an unknown. We don't know it. We don't understand it. We're not ready to let go. We really like to control things. We want to hang on. Even when everything's already done, we still want to hang on. And I think this journey of death and dying is really an opportunity for full surrender. And I think that part of living a really full life is surrendering moment to moment to what is. And when my life is complete, it's complete. And why would I resist that? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the birth of a baby. When the baby's finished developing in mom, it has to come. And for some births, it's really hard. And for other ones, it's like easy. But that journey of life and living is really about how we define our own personal journey. And I think recognizing that birth is traumatic for most of us as we come in, and death can be much easier if we weren't so afraid of it. But I think that fear is what causes a great deal of our suffering.
Yes, and that's true throughout our lives. We have some kind of programming to be afraid of the unknown. I think about, you know, because I think so much about death, I've started to wonder, it's like, am I looking forward to it? That's making me understand that my life is for a reason, that I've been given this for a reason, and that I'm allowed to enjoy it full out.
Absolutely.
We've got this period of time to really enjoy this particular incarnation. What I find very reassuring in my life is that we are greater than this body. It might not be reassuring because sometimes I want to go, if I'm going to end, I want to end. I don't want to keep going. Which is, I think, the disappointment, you know, you and I, not that suicide is a laughing matter, but you and I previously joked a little bit, suicide doesn't end who we are, that we go beyond that. So somebody might be quite disappointed that.
That's, you know, that for me has always been an interesting point. And I've said this to people who have talked to me about them considering suicide. Mm-hmm. And I've just said, you know, just remember, wherever you go, there you are. So it may not end the struggles you're currently experiencing. It'll change them.
Oh, Barbara.
Margie.
Barbara, it was always such a complete joy to spend time with you. And I thank you so much for being here with me today and with my listeners.
Well, I'm so glad you invited me. It's a great topic, a great conversation, and an important one.
Really.
Really important. Thank you for the work you're doing.
You too.
Here is How Great Thou Art, sung by Barbara's daughter, Genevieve. Thank you for listening to Death Happens. My name is Marjorie Wingrove.
Oh,